This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Libraries were once seen as quiet, dusty places that we grew out of. But right now, they're busier than they've been in years, full of people working, meeting, scrolling, borrowing, and just being around other humans. Well, what's pulled us back through the doors, and what does that say about how we're living now?
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know, and if she doesn't, we'll make it
up. Good afternoon, Lauren Rosewarne. Happy New Year.
Hello, and Happy New Year to you too, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Now, for years we heard libraries were becoming irrelevant. What's changed that's made people return in such big numbers, and how big numbers are we talking about?
Yeah, this has always been this threat for libraries, that as every new technology comes along, will we still need this place to go to? And I think COVID kind of, you know, sharpened this fear. And I think there's also the idea of people feeling, I don't want my rate money going to something like this if I don't use it. So there's a number of different cultural things that I think make libraries sort of questioning their existence. But in the last year, they've reported that visits are up 4% since COVID and up 10% from last year. So in Australia, there was something, I had the number in front of me, it was something crazy millions of visitors that Australian libraries have had. 88, there we go, million visits in 2023/2024, which is a huge number of people going into libraries. And I think that does that job of justifying their existence. And there's a number of things that are sort of shifting people's thoughts that maybe libraries are valuable and maybe we should give them a second look.
Do you see this as a nostalgia thing, or is it about something missing in everyday life right now?
Money, yeah, as in we're missing money. So that's a big factor, is this idea that we have less disposable income. And now with so much content, if we're thinking film and television, on streaming services, we can't subscribe to all of these platforms. And I think that idea of, you know, thinking of libraries not just about books, although books are a big part of it, but also media more broadly. Lots of libraries have very large collections and available digitally as well as in, you know, hard copy media. And that's really providing options for people who simply can't afford to keep subscribing to different platforms. And that idea of money is also about money we don't have to go out. So libraries are another place of you and I have spoken about this before, one of those rare places in society where you can go to in air conditioning or heating when the winter comes and not have to spend money to be there.
That's true.
A real rarity in our society.
It is, isn't it? You know when the word library for me brings relief, the feeling of relief. I'm thinking back in school, library duty meant I didn't have to do PE.
Yeah.
I loved it. Oh, the library was a safe haven.
Or kids who are having trouble with making friends or, you know, not necessarily wanting to spend time with that friendship group. A library is a retreat from that. And I think sort of if you tease that idea out a bit more broadly, I mean, yeah, we think of the internet now providing people all the answers to everything, but libraries were also that place where you can get access to content that may not be permissible in the house you live in and find out about stuff that you didn't know was out there. And that sort of safe space for content and knowledge is part of the reason, and you and I have also spoken about this, why, you know, we've seen in Sydney, but we've also seen very widely in the US, attempts to crack down on what libraries stock, because there's this fear of what might happen if you read a book that has some, you know, sexually subversive content in there, God forbid.
Lauren, my local library has put EV car chargers there, a whole pile of them. So,
as has mine.
I think what a great idea, because you can charge your car and you need to wait a little bit. It's not like filling up with petrol. You can read a book or browse something or go
and
relax.
I think this And this is that idea of also libraries being very good at constantly having to reinvent themselves. And whether that was offering computer terminals for people to start, surfing the web in the mid-1990s, through to increasing the stocks of DVDs, of CDs, now digital audiobook downloads. And some libraries even have stuff that you can have, not only toys for children, but sewing machines and other kinds of objects. Yeah, where they become a library of things, because something that you might use once, you don't necessarily want to buy it, but it's this idea of having a place that you can borrow stuff from, which is very much that community feel of libraries that I think is also helping to connect people to the suburbs they live in, particularly when you probably are less inclined to know your direct neighbours anymore.
So there's an environmental side as well. You're not buying that sewing machine that you'll use once and decide it's not for me.
Or you decide you love it and then you will save up for one. But if you don't use one first, it sounds like a good idea. Kind of like when I bought an ice cream machine and made ice cream twice. Now it's there collecting dust. I don't want any more ice cream. And the thing is, had I borrowed it from the library, I would have gotten the ice cream out of my system. But now I've got it taking, you don't want to throw these objects out because you spent money on them. And this is always that thing of capitalism, is you end up with stuff because you think, well, it's wasteful, getting rid of it. Yeah, but it's also wasteful of space that you're storing this stuff.
Lauren, I donated an ice cream maker over the summer period. It's been up in the top shelf of my kitchen for so long. It's so heavy and I've used it twice.
Exactly. And you and I live alone, so exactly how much ice cream are we really making? We could be buying the most expensive tubs out there and just having that on the odd occasion rather than making it ourselves. I think there are certain things you just don't need to make yourself.
Now, people are using libraries as workspaces, study hubs and meeting rooms. I suppose, what does that say about, that work-home-life balance? Is it sort of a more palatable office than having to go into the office? Like, yeah, I'm in the meeting room, but I'm not at home, but I'm not in the office.
I think for people, again, when you live on your own, you don't have this same issue of people being in your space. But if you live in a share house situation, if you've got kids, if you've got partner in a busy household, that idea of needing concentration and needing to get away physically from people, a library provides that option. If you're thinking of your local library, not too far from your house, you're not expected to keep buying cups of coffee to justify you sitting there, but you're in a different environment where you're free from distractions. And a lot of people talk about the reason that they can't work from home effectively is because they're always challenged by, need to do the vacuuming, need to make ice cream, whatever it is. And here, if you're at the library, you've got limited distractions, which gets you out of the house, but not necessarily to a place where you have to spend money. And I think you and I last year, we had a chat about the decrease in lounge rooms in floor plans now because people are wanting to put in all, let's just call it an extra bedroom. Certainly the place I live in, it's not a bedroom, but in an old, in another era, it would have been called a lounge room, whereas now it's called a bedroom because there's a door on it. And that decrease of communal spaces in houses also creates reason as to why there is less room for studying in busy households, and libraries fill that gap.
I imagine it's all digital now, but I used to love borrowing a book and looking at how many times it had been borrowed at the date stamps. Do they still have that little slip, or is it all...
No, and see, that's... I even remember that from, I think school, where those things were in the back of
the thing.
Yeah, but ever since, certainly for all the time I've been connected to a university, it's all digital checkouts, which mean the records kept as much as you can find, that book is out and it will be back on that date, but not all the places it's been to before you.
Sounds of the library. I reckon the sound of that clicking stamp is so therapeutic because it's just easy.
Whereas now you have to check your books out yourself. Whereas now you're checking your books out yourself.
Oh, really?
In most cases, yeah. There's still staff there, so if you physically can't do it. But, yeah, and it's self-checkout in most instances, which is, a game that, supermarkets have been training us how to do this for years.
And remember the other sound? Shh. Do they still do that?
Shh. Well, I don't. That's a good question, because now with more meeting rooms and libraries being gathering places, I wonder if the culture is changing a little bit about that. I think there's still an expectation libraries are generally quiet places, but I think there are meeting rooms set up where you're allowed to be a little bit more rowdy.
We're chatting with Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne about why libraries are booming again. Get in touch. Do you use your local library? 0427 569 949. Sam in Preston says, I work from the library twice a week. It's quieter than cafes.
Yeah. I think that's, again, if I had it was in a share house environment, I'd be in my library much, much more. I think that idea of needing sort of, and I used to when I lived at home with my parents, I'd often use the library for that purpose, where you need a distraction, you don't have any money to spend it on a cafe, a library suits that purposes, because it's purpose built for that as well as all the other things it offers. It offers you space and a table and quiet, as well as, which we need in Victoria at the moment, temperature control.
Yes, Aaron in Footscray says, Lauren's on the money, free Wi-Fi, no pressure to buy coffee. Absolute weird.
Yeah. And I think this is a cultural difference, at least in my experience. When I've lived in the US, I think cafes there are more accepting of people just working there all day, right? Mm. Whereas in Melbourne, I have found cafes don't really like you doing that. And I think there might be some exceptions, but generally there's a move on to culture, and it's much more expensive to keep buying coffees here as opposed to in the US, where it's often sort of bottomless. And I think that's another of those cultural differences as well, which make studying or working from places like cafes harder.
Here's an interesting point, Lauren. Kim in Dandenong says, I feel safer than hanging around shopping centres.
Yeah, I think this is, you mentioned it being a safe space as well. And I think certainly parents, and there's actually research looking at this, where initially libraries thought this was a crisis and then they learnt to adapt, where parents who couldn't pick their kids up immediately after school would actually suggest they go to the library and then they pick them up from the library, because it was perceived, yeah, as the place that was safest for them. Initially, some libraries were like, we are not a babysitting service, and they were quite hostile to it. But then a number of the libraries actually thought, well, no, this is our community too, and we need to adapt. And that idea, I think, of seeing a library as a place that is safer than other places, particularly shopping centres right at this moment in time, I think a library has some, again, built-in benefits to it, and the fact that there's not cash on the premises also, I think, adds to that element of feeling of safety.
Lauren, I wonder if it's you know how we form our feelings as kids through our experiences. I wonder if we're sort of almost predisposed to love the library. Like, I know if I walk into the local library in Richmond, I'll go straight away, because that's my childhood feeling that I associate with libraries. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it almost so we're set up to like them?
And I think it's also, again, it's just a non-pressure environment. It's not like libraries. You know, where school, I think people in general, school is a mixed bag of emotions for people. Libraries tend to be a neutral, if not neutral, to good space. Bad stuff generally doesn't happen in a library. You might have been bullied in the hallway, in the gym, in all the different places, but a library isn't really set up to allow that kind of thing to happen. Librarians are also notoriously tolerant and patient. And help and helpful, and that idea of being able to get answers to really thorny questions. I think a lot of people think of the internet for that now, but that is what librarians are trained for, and they often go out of their way to help as
and
well.
And they're always so kind.
Exactly, and which is why we love librarians.
Absolutely. But something that concerns me, and one final question for you, Lauren, unstaffed libraries, they're starting to appear. I don't like that. Does that solve access issues, or does it risk, you know, losing that human heart of the space?
So what it does do is make us feel, well, look, on one hand, you could say better that than no library. And certainly in a council where there is really strict budget issues, that's a problem. If the library is facing cuts, you'd rather the space stay open than not. But you're right in the sense that that's eliminating the role, the crucial role of the librarian. It's also making it more of a vulnerable space because it feels somewhat unsupervised. Not that people feel, you know, that they're being watched in a library, but there's nonetheless a presence there that make it feel populated and ordered. And I think that goes if the staff goes.
It's almost like the gym, you know, they have the 24-hour gym and they put all these buttons around the place so that if you need to help, you can press a button. I mean, it sort of it took away the nice feeling that someone's there to talk to.
Yeah, and I think also you just don't want that in a library situation. No. But again, we've had a chat, I think about a year ago, where there were some libraries in New South Wales trialling really late hours. And you could imagine for some of those libraries, and I think there are some libraries at the university that do this, where in the very late evening, they'll be unstaffed. And again, that poses both benefits, but also I think some concerns as well. But people have to swipe in, and that gives a recording of who you are. It's not just randos, it's people with library cards. So at least there's some tracking of who is in the premises, the same as the 24-hour gym.
Lauren, just to pivot, if you had to do a return on investment on an ice cream maker or buying ice creams in the cone, what do you reckon?
Cones. I'm not putting the think about the labour and the time and my God, how long it takes to freeze
that
it.
Thing would that freeze. The
you want the ice cream now. I could have just bought the gourmet, and I'm bitter about this ice cream machine. Let me tell you. Bitter.
Thanks, Lauren. Chat to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, Lauren.
Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.